Brethren, it's so good to be with you tonight. We always look forward to being with you here at Bethel and seeing your smiling faces and being able to talk with you about the work a little bit. If you are receiving our newsletter, the print version of our newsletter, and you would like to continue receiving it in print, then please give me your name or name and address, and we'll be sure to keep you on that list. We're trying to convert over as many as we can from the print version to the email version. That will save our work fund and is a benefit to us that way, but still some people want to hold that paper in their hands, and we understand that completely. So if you would like to still receive the print version, please give me your name and address, and we'll be sure that it keeps coming to you. If you're okay with switching over to email, then give me your email address, and we will get it to you that way as well. Brethren, we live over there in the islands. We're there for 9 months and here for 3 months. Sometimes people wonder, well, where are you living? Because there's all different kinds of ways to do mission work. And we are glad to be able to be living there because then we can share more with you about what it's like to be on the field and what it's like to be able to get to know the brethren who are there well enough to be able to understand what they're thinking. At least we hope that we can. And so tonight, what I want to do is to take you to the islands and look at and consider them and their culture and their history. Right. And so I'm sure that we are just almost ready with the pictures coming up. Joey, which one? The top one. The red one. These men are fast. They posted a question on the TV in the back for me to answer so that they know which one. Now everyone turned around and looked. What was that? And while they get that put together, that's it. Thank you, Mike. And brother, the islanders hold on to their tradition and their history very strongly. They love that history. They are not so far removed from the days when they were living separated in villages and there was a chief over the village and everyone had to get permission for whatever it is that they were doing from the chief, and the villages would go to war with one another. It's only in the last 100 years that outside influence has really begun to take a strong influence on these islands. And you may think that the islands are together as different nations working together and have been for a long time, but they haven't. They have been isolated from one another by those ocean waters. And so not until airplanes really came in there and established regular routines have even the islanders been able to interact with people from the other islands. And so it's unique that way. They have their legends, they have their histories, their languages, and they're all just completely different from one another. It's amazing how different and separated that they have been. But they all have their legends. They all have their folklore. And so I'd like to share the work with you tonight a little bit from that standpoint of the different legends that they have. Now, these are not true stories. They're legends. But where you have Pecos Bill, Bigfoot, and Rip Van Winkle, they have Melek, the giant firebird, and the giant bat of Angar. And so these are some of the things I want to share with you. The first story is Melek, the giant bird. There was a well-known shark fisherman, and he went out and catching sharks one day when a giant bird came down behind him and caught a shark out of some driftwood. And so he took off with the shark, and later that day, the man was drawing a picture on the sand of the bird, and the bird came down behind him and turned into a human. And so the fisherman invited that man bird to his house to have breakfast, and so he went, and when the man saw the fisherman's baby, he turned back into a bird and leapt toward the baby. The fisherman, thinking fast, threw a burning stick at the bird, caught his feathers on fire, and the bird took off across the sky. And so whenever the Palauans today see a shooting star going across the sky, they say, oh, just like Melek, the giant firebird. Well, that's one of their stories. And so what we would like to do now is to shoot across the sky of Chuuk. We work with the islands of Palau and Chuuk. We're going to shoot across the sky of Chuuk and see where the churches are and the Lord's work that's going on in that place. So you say, well, where in the world are we talking about? We're talking about this corner. It's the northwest corner of the Pacific Islands. And so we are above the equator. It is just south of Guam. And the churches there exist. There are three congregations of the Lord's body. We're going to start up here at the airport and then make our way down the west side of the island to the first congregation, the Naaman Church of Christ, Naaman Village. And then we're going to wrap around to Epinoop Village and see the church there, the people there, and then go back up the island the same way we came to Miari. This is a little area on top of the mountain that meets, the church there is meeting in a home. And so this is our path. The Chukis people are a poor people. Chuuk is a third world state. Now, my family does not travel with me to Chuuk because it's not such a safe place to go. They stay in Palau. We live in Palau. And then 1 week every 2 or 3 months, I travel alone to Chuuk. And there are good people there. There are some who are the more dangerous sort. But then again, there are many of the good people there. And we have many good brothers and sisters in the church there in Chuuk. It's interesting because as we are going here and we're leaving the town area and we're going out to the village, and here we're coming up on the Naaman Church of Christ building, the people progressively live without water and without electricity. There are electricity lines going out there, but it's prepaid power. And when you don't have a lot of money, I'm going to tell you what, they can really, really make those dollars stretch far for their electricity. They may go to the place where you buy power, get the power token, and spend $6 on power, and then use that only for fans and a light at night. And they'll make that $6 last a very long time. And so they're a poor people. We spend as much time in travel as we do in the actual Bible studies just because this is an underdeveloped island. The road is poor. If it rains, as we go out to Epinoop Village, if it rains, it washes the road out, and you really need a 4x4 to get out there. So sometimes we do like you just saw and take a boat to go around. It's easier to get to the church building where we're going to by going around through the water sometimes. And so it can be an adventure. The people there live with very little money. Most of them don't work at all, but they will just live off the land because there's not a lot of money to be made. There's not a lot of jobs. There's one sister that you'll see a picture of here in a couple of minutes. She works very hard. She'll get up and make con, which is a breadfruit that's peeled and then steamed, and then they pound it into a paste, and then wrap it in a banana leaf, and then she'll take that to the market and sell it. And she'll get $1 per pack of con, and she may sell 10 packs in a day, so that's $10. She'll spend $1. That's her in the background with her hand on her daughter, Isiena, and her daughter's name is Aramina. So she'll spend $1 for the taxi fare to town, and then $1 for taxi fare to get back. So with about 10 to 12 hours worth of work, she's made $8. And so that's why a lot of them don't work, but they live off the land. But brethren, they're growing in the faith, and that's what we're looking for. Even though they're a poor people, that does not have any effect on their love for the Lord or their mental ability to understand what it is the Lord wants from them. We'll leave the Naaman area around 9 a.m., get to Epinoop at 10 a.m., and these are an island people, so it's very relaxed. And you holler out one side of the building, Bible study, and then go to the other side of the building and yell out, Bible study. They don't really get stirring before 10 a.m., and they're not going to come unless they know the teacher is there. Because of the road conditions and sometimes the sea conditions, maybe the teacher's not going to show up, so they'll wait until they hear the Bible study call before coming, and then they'll come. And then we'll have the Bible study for that trip. And brethren, on every trip, we'll go out to Epinoop in the morning so that we can continue and build on the work that was done on the previous trip. That's what it really takes in the islands to keep the work moving, is continual, regular teaching. And then we see growth in them. Then we see progress in them. And so we're excited to continue seeing the work there progress in Epinoop. We focus on different people sometimes. We have several members of the church there in Epinoop. There's a shortage of men. There's an even greater shortage of men who are able and willing to lead in the worship services. And so this is a target area for us. We continue to work on it. This is Sepeta. And Sepeta is Aramina's husband, the young lady you saw a minute ago. And Sepeta will be a good leader and a helpful man if we're able to get him under the water. We've been studying with him for a number of years. The Chukis people get a glimpse of what your life is like. And they are a very, very humble people. The words shy and timid would help to describe who they are. And so that presents, and that's because this world where you live is so first world, and they know that where they live is so third world. They get pirated movies out of the Philippines, and so they see the same movies that you see. And so they have an idea of what life is like off of their island, but it's a world that most of them will never see. And so they regard themselves as low. And they act shy because of it. If you come out to Chuuk with me and we go to Sepeta's house, the first thing he's going to feel is a great shame because he's seen the movies and he knows where you live and this is his house. And so he's going to be very quiet and not talk to us hardly at all, probably have his head down like this during most of the conversation, glancing up as he has to, and that's it. And so that presents a challenge to us in the work. I have to overcome that in order to be able to have a Bible study with this man. In order to be able to have a heart-to-heart talk with him, I've got to overcome that shyness and timidity, you see. And so it takes time. And we go, sometimes I'll take food with me and we'll sit out in front of his house. We might just sit on the ground, you know, and talk together and sit together. And as I'm able to warm him up, then he will start talking to me and we'll be able then to start talking about the most important things. After we can talk about trivial things, then we can talk about the most important things. And this is how we can lead these people to the Lord. We want them to be able to imitate us as hopefully we are able to imitate Christ. And so that is the goal. And progress is being made toward that end. This is Lovesea. And Lovesea is a 14-year-old girl who lives in Epanoop Village. Epanoop is a place where there's a lot of families, but there are no police stations around, and there are no police out in this area. And so it can be challenging in that way. What it means is they are a town unto themselves. And unless things get really bad, then the police won't come. If things get really bad, you can call the police and they'll come out, do what they can do in a day, and then they're out again. So Lovesea has a misaligned eye, and we don't usually take on this kind of a medical effort. We really try to keep the focus on spiritual things, because you could spend all of your time doing medical things or all of your time doing a variety of different do good kind of deeds. We try to keep the focus on spiritual things, but Lovesea's eye is one that we're going to tackle, because both of her parents are members of the church, and having known this girl for years, brethren, out in this place, that misaligned eye affects her view of herself. And that would be any 14-year-old girl anywhere in the world. But in this place, it affects how the rest of the town sees her. It'll affect who she marries and his expectations of her as his wife. Just not good. So if we're able to help, then that's what we're going to do. And so that we have a plan to work on Lovesea's eye. So talk to me more about that if you would like to. We have this is her mother, member of the church, and I asked Lovesea. I said, I want to talk about some of my friends in the States. So show me your room. And so we're going into her house here, and you see it's very sparse. There's really no furniture. I cannot remember a single chair. And this is Lovesea's room. You see her bed and her closet and her clothes. No, it's not there, is it? Brethren, they don't have things. And you say, well, how can they have nothing? If I had just one thing and I wanted to take care of it, then I would take care of it. You know what we've done? We've taken in like Happy Meal toys to the children before so that they have something. And then on the next trip, come back and where's your toys? Oh, it's gone. It's gone. And so they play rough with them. And so they don't last. But suppose you had a child who took that Happy Meal toy and really loved it and cared for it and said, I'm going to hang on to this and I'm going to keep it safe and I'm going to hold it right here. If you had a child to do that, then what would happen is whenever he sat it down, maybe to go to sleep at night, or when he sat it down and was doing something else, his friends or his brothers and sisters would come along, grab it, play with it, and break it. And so it's just very difficult for them to keep and maintain anything because of the living conditions. And so what I can show you is Lovesea's report card. They have it handwritten. The teacher hand wrote it, and it's taped up on the wall. Lovesea's an excellent student, I can tell you that. But brethren, it's a different world. It's a different world, and their thinking is different. And as we learn their thinking, then we are able to share the gospel with them. So feel free to ask me more about Lovesea. The Bible studies here take place in the morning. It takes an hour to get out there, then an hour and a half for the Bible study, and then it's back to town for lunch. And brethren, as we go back to town, I want to show you something that really represents the Chukis culture. This is a restaurant. It's the Layside restaurant. It's in the middle of town, but there's no sign. There's an open sign, but no sign to indicate what it is, that it is the Layside restaurant. They don't have hardly any tourists in Chuuk. Those that do come are diving the World War II wrecks, and they pretty well eat in the hotels where they stay. And so this restaurant really is for the local people. Well, all of the local people already know it's the Layside restaurant. They've known it's been there for years, and so they know it. And so there's no need for the owners to put a sign out front. You know what it really is? What it really is the island-style, relaxed attitude. Now, there's no need to put up a sign. It would take money, it would take a board, and it would take paint and time to do it, and I don't want to do it. Do you want to do it? Just a very relaxed island-style attitude, lackadaisical attitude. And you may know of that from different trips that you've been on, or you may think about Jamaica. And isn't that cute, the little island-style island time and island-style thinking that they have? Brethren, it is cute, but it comes to a point where it's so relaxed that it affects business. Or in our case, it affects the work of the church. You know, because they don't have a sign, I'm quite certain that they miss some business. And so there's a limit to how cute the island relaxed mentality is. Well, I'm going to show you now how that relaxed mentality affects the work of the church. This is the Naaman Church of Christ building, the most established of the three congregations there in Chuuk. And that's great. They really expect more in the teaching. They want some deeper teaching, and we're very happy to give that to them. And so we have the Bible classes here daily. In the beginning of the afternoon, there in Naaman. But I was going and picking up brethren for the Sunday morning worship service, and one of the sisters brought a visitor with her, which meant that I didn't have room to pick up everybody that I told them I was going to come pick them up. Well, that was okay. That's a great problem to have. It's going to delay the church service by about 30 minutes because I'm going to have to drop these people off and then go back and get them. So this is some video of that visitor on her initial walk up to our church building on that Sunday morning. I meant to just get some footage of people walking up to the church building, but what I got was something more. So watch her. Brethren have been making a road going up off to the right, and so it's muddy. The mud has just come down the mountain. You can't see in the video that there's puddles of water there, and she's in her Sunday outfit. This is Sunday clothes right here. This is Chuuki Sunday clothes. And so it's a moo-moo, but brethren, it's a nice moo-moo, okay? And she's got her good shoes on. And so she doesn't want to walk through this, and she stops and looks at it. And then she gets over there to the grass. The grass is too high. You know, brethren, I had asked them to cut the grass, but that relaxed attitude, they did not cut the grass, and so it looks bad to visitors. The mud puddles look bad to visitors. Why couldn't they put some tin down and at least make a walkway over to the church building? That relaxed island mentality. And so here's the grass, and it's too high, and that's that relaxed island mentality. I arrived to the church building on this Sunday morning with the first load of people, and I asked one of the sisters, "Did you go get Torin and Matlin?" Because I had asked them to go get Torin and Matlin. No, they didn't go get. They forgot to go get Torin and Matlin. Okay, well, can you go get them now? Okay, well, there's a flat tire. There really was a flat tire. I said, well, can you wheel it down to the little front yard service station that's down the road? They've got an air compressor down there. Put air in the tire. Don't fix the leak right now. It's a slow leak. Just put air in the tire and go get Torin and Matlin. Okay, so she goes. She comes back a few minutes later. The air compressor's broken. And so what it means is that I will go get Torin and Matlin after I pick up the other brother that I committed to pick up, and the worship services are going to be delayed by 45 minutes to an hour after this visitor and any other visitors that we had that morning stepped over the mud to get to the church building and through this very tall grass. There's your island, cute, relaxed mentality. But you know what, brethren? That's why they need us. That's what we're there for. These are the kind of challenges that we're meant to address. And so there are great benefits to the work. There are blessings to the work. There are challenges to the work. This island mentality is one of the challenges when it affects this kind of thing. Well, I'm happy to let you know that this visitor was not affected by these things. She noticed them. They stood out to her. I grabbed a translator just as soon as I got back and went over and talked to her and explained they're doing construction, they were not able to cut the grass, and this and this. And when we picked her up and brought her to the worship service, she was silent as a mouse. But as we took her back home that afternoon, she talked constantly. The whole trip back, just a completely different person, the whole trip back, she talked about how much she enjoyed the service, about how much she enjoyed the lessons about Jesus and about God. It was nonstop. And so she did not let those things affect her, but those are some of the things that are different in working with that island culture in a third world country kind of setting. The churches in Chuuk are growing, and they are coming along. That was the second one of them. Now we're going to go up the mountain. We're going to go to Miari, and this is the little church that's meeting in the house up on top of the hill. They are mostly women. There's six of them. They're mostly women, and so they are in need of men to come and lead the church services. Men up there have been baptized, but they also have moved down off the mountain. These are an itinerant people. They're just constantly moving about. So that's challenging when you're trying to get leadership in a congregation that will stay and therefore help it to grow. But it's also good when it comes to planting new churches. We were able to start this congregation because some of our members from Naaman moved up there to the top of the mountain. Well, so that's a blessing. There's a challenge to it and a blessing to it. And so we're going to go up here, and this is where one of our sisters named Pia, she was married to the preacher, and you may remember from my last report 2 years ago that he passed away. He went on a fishing trip and passed away. So Pia went and married, his name was Frog. Pia went and married Frog's brother, okay? And Frog's brother is Chester. We've been having Bible studies with Chester regularly, and we'll see what comes about with Chester in just a moment. But brethren, it's always good to go up here on the mountain. The church up there is really dealing with the need for basics. We talk about the distinctiveness of the church. We talk about how to worship. We talk about the importance of worshiping God every Sunday and the importance of personal Bible study. These are the very, very basic, beginning, fundamental things, and that's what we spend a lot of time talking about up there and saying in a variety of ways, using different scriptures and different approaches, and the church is growing. The church is growing. Slowly but surely, the church is growing. There is a steady and continual progress of the churches here in Chuuk. It's not super fast, but brethren, it's steady, and that's something that we really cherish and love. There's a pier out in Epanut Village, and it was during World War II, the Japanese built it, and since that time, the concrete has eroded away where it's just the rocks, and some of the rocks are under the water, and some of the rocks are up above the water, but they're all jagged. The ones under the water have moss growing on them, so they're slippery. So it's slippery and jagged. So we go out there to do our baptisms. And so if you go out on that pier with me, then what you'll do is take one step, make sure that foot is solid and secure, and then you'll take another step and make sure that foot is solid and secure, and then another step. And that is exactly the way the churches grow in Chuuk. It's one step at a time, but brethren, it's continual, steady progress forward. This is Pia over on the left side of the screen. She and Noniko are deep in Bible study here. We have, just like you have a lot of times in a third world country, different visitors to the worship services. And here we have a chicken. This chicken was there at three different occasions. And the Filipinos have a great recipe for chicken. It's called chicken adobo. You might want to go home and look it up on the internet and make it. It's black peppercorns, bay leaves, vinegar, and soy sauce. And you may think that won't make a great meal, but just try chicken adobo. You'll be very happy. We've threatened this chicken that we're going to baptize him in some very hot water, and then put those spices in there and see what happens, right? So maybe. The man that I was telling you about a few minutes ago, Chester, is after a series of these Bible studies that Chester was ready to be baptized. And so here, Chester is going under the water. We're thankful for times like these and appreciative that he is ready to put his Lord on in Christ. As we move on out of Chuuk now, We want to be back into the hotel or back to the camping area, wherever it is, before nightfall, because Chuuk is not such a safe place after nightfall. Their Bibles in Chuuk are kind of like the toys. They just don't last very long. In a very humid environment, they soak up that moisture. These brethren don't have windows, really. They don't have air conditioners, and so they just absorb that moisture. But we were trying to buy Bibles. And this is another one of the things where that island relaxed mentality has its effect. This is a college. We're at a college there in Chuuk, and the word was that one of the ladies in the office at this college had Bibles for sale. And the problem with it is that she's a lady who is in a position of authority there in the island culture, which means that she doesn't really have to keep office hours. We went to this place 20 different times during business hours and trying to find the lady and could never find her. Well, we believe we'll be able to find her one of these days and to be able to get new Bibles for the brethren there in Chuuk, and we'll look forward to that. You know, we've been talking about different legends of Palau, so now let's talk about another one. In Palau, the people did not used to do natural childbirth. This is part of the legend. But rather what they did was a C-section with sharpened shells. And so the women would never survive. And there was a girl who went to a tree, a titimel tree, a sour fruit tree. And she was collecting fruit. And a spider came down and turned into a very handsome man, as I understand it. And so they ended up getting married. And she became pregnant, and it came time for her to deliver the baby. He did not want the family to come and deliver the baby by those sharpened shells. And so he went back up the tree to his spider mother and said, how do we deliver human babies? And she taught him. And now from this day forward, they've been able to have natural childbirth, and because of this very special spider that could turn into a man. Interestingly enough, in Palau today, they do have natural childbirth. They do not have epidurals. And so if you go to Palau, it will be 100% natural, and that's the only choice. So how about that? The thing about having those births there in Palau is that we also have spiritual births. And here we have a series of baptisms. There have been several baptisms since I was with you last, and we're happy to be able to report on those and let you know that these are new Christians who are growing in the faith. Brethren, the baptisms are an important part of the growth of the church. They are not the growth that takes place afterwards where these people turn into mature Christians, but it's a starting point, isn't it? It's the beginning starting point. And so the goal, really, is to make disciples, and baptisms are the first step in those things. Here you see the verses from Luke 14 about counting the cost of being a Christian. And brethren, so very important. Whenever someone comes along and they say they want to be baptized, we may put them off for a few days to make sure that they go through a few more of the Bible studies, because what's really needed for the growth of these churches is Christians who will stick, Christians who will last. If you come along and say, oh, we've got someone who wants to be baptized, but we haven't really had the chance to study with them yet, well, we'll say, no, we need to study. They need to count the cost. They need to understand what it is that they're committing to and what it is that they're signing up for. You know, all too often, a quick decision to get into something is also a quick decision to get out of something. And so we want them to really weigh the cost of being a Christian so that they can last and be a part of the making disciples. It's not about the reports that come out that, oh, the number of baptisms. It's about the number of disciples that last. And so that's what we're after there in the islands. My two older children were baptized since I was with you last. And I was not able to be there for their baptism, which was very sad for me. I had already gone back to Palau at that time, and the family stayed here in the States for some more medical treatment that they were finishing up. And so, brethren, there are times when it is a challenge to deal with the different things that happen on the mission field. This was the greatest one ever. This was the greatest one. The day of their baptism is greater than the day of their physical birth, and it's greater than the day of their possible future marriage. But however, I'm very thankful that they decided to be baptized, and thankful that these islanders decided to be baptized as well. Let me skip forward through this story, because we are out of time together. The man in this story found a piece of money, a money bead, a Palawan money bead inside of an orange. And ask me later, I can tell you more of that story. But there in the islands, we're able to have some unique people as well. And after their baptism, then we're working with these men and brethren to help them continue on and be growing in the faith so that they can be teaching. We have Pacific Islands Bible College classes, and these men are growing through that. And I know that you've heard of that from Stacy Ferguson, who also has been able to be here and report with you. And so they're growing, and the churches are growing because of it. We're thankful for that. I want to tell you about one man as we come to a close this evening. And his name is Joey. He has a great name. His name is Joey also. And Joey I met in a taxi. And while we were in the taxi together, I invited him to our worship services. And so he came, and he attended some of our Bible classes as well. And so Joey was just really showing terrific interest. He had spent some time in the States, actually, and his English was very good. I was able to speak directly to him and not be working through a translator. And so then it was time for me to leave, and I was asking Joey, well, where are you going to be when I come back so we can continue these Bible studies? He said, well, I got to go back to Ponawat. He lived on the island of Ponawat. And brethren, Ponawat is a 2 to 3 week trip to get up to the other side of the islands of Chuuk. And so it's far away. And I said, well, how can I get a hold of you? How can I get a hold of you? Here's the taxi. And he said, well, Ponawat is up in this area of Chuuk. And I said, well, I'll call you on the cell phone. He said, there's no cell tower on Ponawat. I said, okay, well, if that's the case, then I'll just call you on the landline. He said, well, there's no landline on Ponawat either. I said, well, that's going to be awkward. How about I just send you a letter then and let you know when I'm coming? He said, there's no mail service on Ponawat. Well, how about electricity, Joey? You have electricity on Ponawat? No, no. So you're talking about a very underdeveloped island. The only way that I could get a message to Joey Uro was to go to the FM radio station to make an announcement, and they would send that message over all of the islands of Chuuk. Anyone who could tune in with their radio, and what they would do is broadcast over the air, this is a message for Joey Uro. Joey Treat is planning to come and visit you on the next supply ship, so please get ready. That was the only way to get a message to that man that I was coming. And brethren, I tried to go then to the place where you'd make arrangements to get on the supply ship, and the company had just changed hands. It was going to be a month of travel, 2 weeks up and 2 weeks back, just to go see Joey Uro on Ponawat. But he was such a great lead for our Bible studies that I didn't know how I could not pursue this man. Well, when I got back to Chuuk, he had not returned to Ponawat. The doctor had given him a reason that he needed to stay on the main island, and so he did. Hermas baptized him, the preacher there at Naaman, and he was teaching and growing in the faith. Brethren, just a perfect example of what it is we hope to see whenever someone comes to the Lord. It's one of those examples where you say, this is just too good. This is just too perfect. And you know what, brethren? It was. There was a problem. The people of Chuuk are oftentimes living outside of marriage, but they may live together for years and years that way and have children together. It's a little bit of a hassle for them to go and fill out the paperwork. Plus, they have to come up with $50 for the marriage certificate. And so that's a significant amount for a Chuukese family, Chuukese couple. Well, when we found that out, of course, began to work on it right away. I was not the one that baptized Joey. I always ask that question before the baptism so we can do it, so we can handle those kind of things first. And so I told Joey, well, listen, move out from her, at least for this time, until we're able to talk to her and see maybe that y'all can get married. And so he took that message over to Anita and asked her, do you want to get married? And she said, no, no. She did not want to marry him. So, brethren, we go back to square one, and that is me talking to her, and that is, first we've got to start talking about trivial things, and I've got to earn her trust and start breaking down those barriers, and that is exactly what we did. And it took a few trips in order to talk to Anita heart to heart, but then I'm happy to report to you that Anita and Joey got married. They got married in March of this year. And one of the things that's very different among the Chuukese people is any outward display of affection. a kiss in public in Chuukies is just forbidden, and they won't even hardly hold hands. And so when I said, "Do you want to kiss the bride?" he kind of giggled, said yes, and so they had a little kiss right there. But now they're married. And now Joey, where he had stepped out for a while, is right back to teaching and preaching in the churches and right back on track, right back on top like we hoped that he would be. And so what we immediately then started to do is having regular Bible studies with Anita. And I really believe that with a few more trips, she will come and be baptized as well. And so, brethren, that's one of the success stories. We have great success stories. We have stories when it does not end in success. But the bottom line is that it is steady, progressive movement forward. You know, that's what we're looking for there in the islands. There's the story of the tortoise and the hare. Well, over in the islands, we have the story of the swordfish and the crab. And so, no, it's a hermit crab. It's a hermit crab. And so all the little hermit crabs make their arrangements where they're going to stay ahead of the swordfish, and it's a race around the island of Bobbledob in Palau. And so the swordfish takes off, and he keeps looking behind him. The little hermit crab's way back there, and before he knows it, there's a hermit crab up in front of him. So he speeds up again. Well, that's the story. And so what the swordfish does is he gets very aggravated that the hermit crab is always in front of him, and so he pulls around off to the side of Bobbledob Island and gets a great big running speed and a jump and tries to jump over the island, and his bill, smack, gets stuck into a pandanus tree, and then the race is over and he loses. That's the story of the swordfish and the hermit crab. But you know, in that, when it comes to our work there in Chuuk and our work in Palau, I would rather it be the way of the hermit crab. I would rather have slow, steady progress that we can understand what's going on and work with these people one by one than have a great influx and great speed of people that maybe we're going to lose some along the wayside. So maybe that applies to our spiritual lives as well. How's your spiritual growth? How's your development in Christ? You know, we're all doing that, aren't we? We're all growing. Are you growing like the swordfish, or are you growing like the hermit crab? Is it slow and steady, or is it strong and impulsive? Maybe one is better than the other. Maybe if we're not able to have the intensity of the swordfish, then maybe the slow and steady growth of the hermit crab is better, as long as we're growing. These brethren here in Chuuk, slowly but surely, they're growing. May we all be growing as well. This evening, maybe you need to start that growth process. Maybe you need to come to the Lord and have your sins washed away in baptism, believing, repenting, and confessing his name. Or if you need the prayers of the church for any reason at all, won't you come right now as we stand and sing?